And welcome in, everyone, to Redacted on this Wednesday. I'm Clayton Morris.
I'm Natalie Morris.
And on this show, we tend to cover the stories the mainstream media ignores. And we are going to cover some big stories today, certainly on the Epstein client list that could be incoming as it relates to AG Pam Bondi now being officially sworn in as Attorney General. And there are rumors swirling right now that this thing is about to drop. You have to wonder, though, if it's about to drop or they're going to wait for Kash Patel to get in, because he said they would sort of tag team this and release it sort of simultaneously. So we'll see all of that, but we're going to cover what AG Pam Bondi just did, because that's not the only thing that she's about to do, not just the Epstein list, but also sanctuary cities, a number of orders from her office just in the first few hours. We will go through that.
File that under this girl not messing around.
Yeah, because, good for her.
Yeah, she, no moss grows on that stone. We're also going to talk about who is state-run media that you may not have known is state-run media. You probably have an inkling based on their coverage, but more news outlets are being exposed under this USAID debacle where the government is pulling back on USAID, and we're seeing, where did our money go? Oh, for journalists to lie to us.
Also, I mean, the fallout from this Trump comments in the White House yesterday with Benjamin Netanyahu, where the United States is going to take over Gaza. We're going to move people out of there and basically build a new economic zone. I mean, the fallout from this, both on the good side and bad side around the world, is reverberating. So we're going to talk more deeply about that today. And has the White House sort of clarified a position on that? It apparently caught Israelis totally by surprise, even members of Trump's own staff totally by surprise. They didn't know that this was coming. And we're also going to talk about the CIA. Guess what? The CIA apparently doesn't trust Israel. Really? We're going to talk about some new reports out of the CIA, which is looks like it's about to be purged.
Plus, a bombshell report out of the province of Alberta in Canada published a damning report about the COVID pandemic. This is a government saying we got it all wrong during the pandemic when it came to vaccines, masks, lockdowns, all of it. And guess what? We were led by the nose by the federal government. I can't wait for you to see this report, because it's what we have already known here, and it is what now a government is admitting. And I'm like this about it. So stay tuned for that.
Also, we're going to talk about Trudeau, because it looks like he was lying to President Trump about that those 10,000 soldiers heading to the border to help out to avoid tariffs. So we've got a lot of stories to get to here. And someone in the chat says, yes, Redacted is not federally funded. So we don't receive any money from the feds. No. We don't receive any money from USAID. We're just going to declaratively state that right here. We are supported by you and the few sponsors that we have here on the show.
And the sponsors that we have, we tell you outright.
Yes.
So that's what we got.
All right, let's get into it, shall we? Let's get into the news. So get ready, folks. The Epstein list could be dropping at any moment. Now that Pam Bondi was just sworn in as the new Attorney General. Of course, she served as Attorney General of Florida. She's a fantastic woman. She's a fantastic Attorney General of Florida. And she was just sworn in, and she promised that she would do it. She promised that she would do it. And according to sources, Bondi is already calling for the list to be released ASAP. So now my question is, we'll get to the Kash Patel piece of this in a second, because he said the same thing. So the two of them working in conjunction, but he hasn't been confirmed yet. Are they going to wait until he's in before they fully release the list? Because there's a lot of FBI side of this that will have to go hand in hand. Nevertheless, Democrats are in panic mode today over this, including Bill Clinton. She just talked about this with Sean Hannity and the number of people who are about to be exposed. Watch.
Well, we know he was on the plane, not only on the plane a couple times, multiple times. He traveled internationally with Jeffrey Epstein. And he was on the plane called the Lolita Express because it supposedly had a bed in there where Jeffrey Epstein had young girls. He has been a friend of his, a continuing friend of his for years and years. Contrast that with Donald Trump, who hasn't spoken to him in many years, over a decade, after he kicked him out of Mar-a-Lago for bad behavior.
So we'll see exactly how all this comes together. We know that reporting from the New York Post today has the British side of this. They're kind of in panic mode. We also know the king is not happy and is said to be embarrassed by Prince Andrew. New reports from the New York Post today saying that Prince Andrew is terrified to ever visit the United States again, after now there are fresh calls from in the FBI to go further into the Epstein client list and look for more deeply at the corruption and the sex trafficking, his involvement in the child sex trafficking piece of this.
Recall how British Parliament defended him and fought for extradition for Julian Assange over claims that he had sexually assaulted ladies. British Parliament, total hypocrites for protecting the royalty while calling for and lacking curiosity about the actual claims of sexual assault for Julian Assange. I can't let that one go. Please go ahead.
Senator Marsha Blackburn, of course, last week just asked Kash Patel about this very thing. So here's the Kash Patel side of this. He says, absolutely. And of course, we're waiting for that confirmation hearing to the actual vote to happen for Kash Patel. So wondering exactly when the timing of this will come out of AG Pam Bondi's office. But here was Senator Blackburn asking Kash Patel specifically about this.
I want to talk to you about the Epstein case. I have worked on this for years, trying to get those records of who flew on Epstein's plane and who helped him build this international human trafficking, sex trafficking ring. Now, earlier, I urged then-Chairman Durbin to subpoena those records, and I ended up being blocked by Senator Durbin and Christopher Wray. They stonewalled on this. And I know that breaking up these trafficking rings is important to President Trump. So will you work with me on this issue so we know who worked with Jeffrey Epstein in building these sex trafficking rings?
Absolutely, Senator. Child sex trafficking has no place in the United States of America, and I will do everything, if confirmed as FBI director, to make sure the American public knows the full weight of what happened in the past and how we are going to countermand missing children and exploited children going forward.
Thank you for that.
So right now we're all on like Epstein watch. She has directed a number of orders inside her office. And so it's unclear exactly how this list would be released, how much of it would be redacted, or is it full transparency and being released, and how much of this will have the FBI side of this and Kash Patel's involvement when he is officially confirmed and puts his hand on the Bible and is sworn in. So we're waiting on that side of it.
Don't you feel like you have a fish on the hook? And it may get away before you roll it in. That's how I feel about this.
Well, I felt, but now that she's in, that's a huge piece of this. You know, Kash Patel, I'm certain he's going to be confirmed. I think there's all evidence to the, you know, to the confirmation of Kash Patel. Go ahead, Philip.
Oh, I was going to say, like, I know exactly what Natalie is saying, because I feel like if we actually get this list, it'll be one of two things, in my opinion. It will be completely redacted and there will be no names on it, or it'll be 50% redacted because there are too many powerful people that are tied to all of this that they're not going to want their name out. So I think we're either going to get fully redacted or like half redacted, but I don't think we're ever going to see the full list.
I hope so. Yeah, we'll see. I mean, and again, we were talking just here before the show, you know, Trump, obviously. And how long ago did he, you know Jeffrey Epstein? So full transparency. So let's have the Donald Trump side of it out there fully as well. So we can see how many times he met with him, all of those pieces, just so everything is out there. No, like, right, you know, right wing conspiracy, left wing conspiracy. You know, we are an independent show, so we think both of these parties are corrupt. So I want all of the names out there. I don't care who, I don't care what party, what affiliation. I want them all out there. Well, another big thing from Attorney General Pam Bondi's office today, not wasting any time. On her first day in office today, she made huge moves against sanctuary cities. She just ordered the Department of Justice to immediately stop all federal funding to cities that refuse to cooperate with immigration enforcement. That means places like New York, Chicago, San Francisco could soon be feeling the financial squeeze from the federal government if they don't comply with this. And Fox News exclusively got a list of like her executive orders that she's put in place or her directives today. She's also going after NGOs, those non-governmental organizations that are helping illegal immigrants, which is fabulous. We've been hoping that she would go, because those NGOs are responsible for the sex trafficking into the United States. Catholic Charities, HIAS, which is the Hebrew International Aid Society. So yes, both the Catholics and the Jews, the Hebrews and the Catholics, and non-governmental organizations, we've covered them here on the show. And many more of these NGOs that are responsible for funneling these illegal immigrants into the United States. They need to be cut off. They need to be investigated criminally, because where did all these children go? at the hands of the Biden administration under the Department of Homeland Security and Alejandro Mayorkas.
She's also said she's going to go after government officials who are thwarting ICE investigations and any investigation into illegal migrants. And so nobody is safe. Recall that American citizens do face penalties for aiding and abetting any. So you need to speak with your own lawyer before you go online and say, I'm not cooperating with this. Yeah. Governor Phil Murphy of New Jersey.
Right. Governor Phil Murphy of New Jersey, who admitted that he has an illegal immigrant like living in his house.
To which Tom Homan said, thank you, sir.
We're on this one.
Yeah.
It's unbelievable. You're a governor of New Jersey and you're like, by the way, I'm harboring an illegal immigrant in my house. Like,
and I think I'm above it.
What? Okay. Anyway, so the bottom line on that one, follow the law or lose the cash if you're a sanctuary city. So, I'm curious what's going to happen in some of these cities like Denver and San Francisco and others. And a number of other, she's also lifted the federal moratorium on the death penalty this afternoon. New focus on capital punishment for federal cases. She also outlined a strategy to go after drug cartels specifically and organized crime and drug trafficking throughout the nation in general, and also depoliticizing the DOJ. So she's walking in today, though, with a messy FBI. I mean, you've got like, you know, thousands of agents right now that are worried about like being kicked out of the agency because of their involvement in January 6th. So she's walking into an absolute mess that she's going to have to try to clean up. But hopefully we get this Jeffrey Epstein list here very, very soon. It might even drop here during the show. If it does drop like right while we're talking, please let me know because I'd like to go through it.
We're going to have to hold, please.
Yes.
All right. Well, we're continuing to peel back the rotten onion that is U.S. aid after the federal government announced that it is repealing funding and absorbing it into the State Department. As that's being done, the rest of us are being notified of what our tax dollars have been put into. We've talked about some of the more absurd ones, such as a drag opera in South America, things like that. But now we're looking at how U.S. aid was funneling millions of dollars to Politico, the news organization. Politico, it turns out, was state-run media. Now, if you follow their coverage, that's been pretty clear. But here is what some eagle-eyed observers have pointed out. And in fact, it seems to be true.
That's right. That, in fact, Politico receiving, specifically USAID buying Politico Pro subscriptions to the tunes of millions of dollars. So USAID funneling millions of dollars to Politico. Now, people online would say, well, no, these were pro subscriptions. Doesn't matter. It's still Politico Pro. So they
okay. But if you look at the money, it's $500,000 for 37 subscriptions. Those are really expensive subscriptions.
That's a subscription.
Also, State Department whistleblower Mike Benz points out that there is a difference between U.S. spending of a grant database and a U.S. spending for premium subscriptions and also paying media outlets to produce news. And these revelations show that USAID was doing both. So it's not just paid subscriptions. It's also pay-for-play media, which we are supposed to disclose when you have conflicts.
Exactly.
That was not being done.
Like if we're on the show here and doing a story about, I don't know, something in the government, and we didn't tell you that, like, oh, USAID paid us for this show. Like, I mean, that's an FTC violation, right?
Well, I can give you another example. When we have wellness company doctors here on the show, because they are the ones who have been calling out the government for pandemic measures, we need to tell you that the wellness company is also a sponsor of our show. We make sure to do that because we would never want to mislead you. And we are supposed to. Those are the rules.
Yeah. All right. But also to talk about this. So the money that was flowing from USAID to Politico, shut off. So USAID shut down the other day, essentially. We'll see how much of it gets folded into Marco Rubio's State Department. But what's interesting is that all of a sudden, for the first time in their history, Politico sent out an email to their employees letting them know that their payroll system had a glitch and they weren't able to get their paychecks out. Dear team, Goalie and I want to address this morning's payroll issue directly. Due to what we believe is a technical error, employees did not receive their paychecks as scheduled. We understand the urgency of this matter and sincerely apologize for the inconvenience. Our team is working diligently with our system vendors and the bank to identify the root cause and implement a solution as quickly as possible. Okay. Does it have anything to do with the fact that they just shut off your funding? Maybe. We don't know. Or it could just be a technical glitch. But that's the first time that that's ever happened to Politico.
Now, when we look at the types of stories that Politico covers, we look at how they were one of the first to call the Hunter Biden laptop Russian disinformation. Well, where do you think they got that? We know exactly where they got that because the FBI fed this story to many media outlets, not just Politico, but they dutifully picked it up. Interesting, though, that the White House at the press briefing just today said to their faces, because they were in the room, that, you know, they're not getting any funding anymore. So your paycheck was the last one. Watch.
So upon coming out here to the briefing room, I was made aware of the funding from USAID to media outlets, including Politico, who I know has a seat in this room. And I can confirm that the more than $8 million taxpayer dollars that have gone to essentially subsidizing subscriptions to Politico on the American taxpayer's dime will no longer be happening. The DOGE team is working on canceling those payments now.
Oh, can you imagine being the reporter from Politico in that room? Okay, but also, am I going to get a paycheck anymore? Because you guys have been funding my biased journalism.
Very silent on this, too. I've been watching their feed. Go ahead, please.
I imagine they're going to be, the reporter will be grabbing some extra snacks on the way out from the snack table. Because
and a toilet paper roll.
Some of those nature bars on the way out.
Right.
I'm not going to be eating for a few weeks.
Here's how this is being perceived. It's a little, okay, yes, it's a Schadenfreude. Here's a story that Politico published just today from a reporter saying, hey, this is my first story on Politico about how President Trump's actions are informed by Project 2025. Well, of course, that's in line with the deep state's agenda, right? And so look at the comments here, how people are saying, oh, we know that your government bosses told you to write this. Oh, your X feed must be pretty bad now that everyone knows that USAID paid for this. Reporting paid for by my taxes. It just goes on and on and on. This poor lady who just took an assignment that she was passionate about is getting hammered because we all know that this is in line with a deep state agenda that is no longer subsidized by taxpayers. And in fact, even in Europe, Hungarian Prime Minister Viktor Orban said this about it. So apparently, USAID was financing the ultra-progressive Politico in Brussels. So even they had an agenda in Europe, and they called Orban the disruptor of the year. He's saying, okay, now I see why and where that came from. So he thanks Donald Trump for putting an end to this and uncovering it, which, I mean, it's what the rest of us sort of feel anyway when we read Politico and their contemporaries. But now we know what we thought we knew.
All right, we got more news to get to here. Oops, sorry.
Oh, sorry, if I could just real quick. I a serious question, I'm wondering, like, honestly, if the CIA relies so much on this media manipulation, like, what is their plan? What, like, how can the CIA operate if they can't control the narrative like that? Like they seriously, like, it's not just a blow to Politico. Like, the CIA is in serious trouble if they no longer have that tool.
Yeah,
available.
That's a great question for our next guest.
Yeah, we've got a CIA whistleblower, John Kiriakou, is going to be joining us in a moment here, and let's ask him. We brought him on for another story, but we'll ask him that question. John is a very smart man, so we'll talk to him about that in a second. But we're going to talk to John specifically about this expunging right now. Am I using the right word? Expunging?
Let's call it a purge. I don't know
the CIA purge.
If there's a gerund to expunge.
Oh, yeah. So they're going to, the Trump administration purging the CIA right now. I believe the report is last night they've offered them, like, hey, you can get like 8 months pay and just leave, quit now. Basically essentially shutting down the CIA. But also we're learning that the CIA really doesn't trust Israel and a lot of the intel assets from Israel inside the United States. So we're going to talk all about that in a second. But first, I just had some lunch. And I had a Factor meal. I actually had a delicious chicken meal with some string beans today.
True story.
It was my lunch today. And if you're ready to optimize your nutrition this year, Factor has chef-made gourmet meals that make eating very, very easy. And I've lost now 5 pounds. And I feel great about it. They are dietitian approved, ready to heat and eat in 2 minutes. So you can fuel right and feel great no matter what life throws at you. Factor arrives fresh and fully prepared. Perfect for any active, busy lifestyle. You can just throw it right in the oven, right in the microwave for two to 3 minutes, and you're done. Lose up to 8 pounds in 8 weeks with their Factor Keto meals based on randomized controlled clinical trials with Factor Keto. The results will vary depending on diet and exercise, of course. I go to the gym, and yes, I work out every day, but I also now cut out like a lot of the carbs and I've been eating very, very healthy. So that's why I've lost 5 pounds. And my daughter said, "Daddy, how much weight have you lost?" And I said, 5 pounds. She said, "That's in a week." And I said, "Yes, it is." So she was impressed. Anyway, call right now. Eat smart with Factor. Get started at factormeals.com/redacted50. To get 50 off right now. See that on your screen? It's redacted 50 off. So go to factormeals.com/redacted50off to get 50% off your first box plus free shipping. That's code redacted50off at factormeals.com/redacted50off to get 50% off plus free shipping on your first box. So thanks to Factor for supporting independent media here. Thank you, Factor.
So now you know who we take money for. They are not the CIA. So
exactly.
There we go. Okay, well, the Trump administration is said to be ready to purge the CIA the same way it did other federal workers. Now, this is the same offer that other federal government workers were offered. If you retire, you'll get paid for 6 to 8 months. You don't have to come to work, and then your contract ends and you go do something else. Now, the Wall Street Journal reports that this move is to, quote, bring the agency in line with President Trump's priorities, including targeting drug cartels. A CIA spokesperson said that this is an effort to infuse the agency with renewed energy. But is there something more? Well, our next guest is a former CIA agent and a whistleblower. He says that the CIA considers Israel an antagonistic power to the tune of North Korea. He joins us today. Thank you for joining us, John Kiriakou.
Oh, it's my pleasure. Thanks so much for having me.
The pleasure's all ours. So do you think that this CIA purge is perhaps related to the Netanyahu visit, or is this something that Israel actually wants?
I don't think it has very much to do with Israel. I think it has very much to do with Donald Trump. And to tell you the truth, Donald Trump is the first president with the guts to downsize the CIA since the Carter administration. The organization has just grown and grown, and it's become bloated and top-heavy. I remember 20 years ago, senior CIA officers saying that it was inexcusable that there were more CIA officials in CIA headquarters than there were overseas actually doing the job of recruiting spies to steal secrets. So I think this is a very positive development.
I want to get back to the relationship with Israel inside the United States in a second. But right before the break, we were talking about the media. We've had a number of whistleblowers on our show tell us that if the CIA, the deep state, the intelligence community want to get stories out, they can go to Politico, they can go to the Washington Post, they go to the New York Times. That's where a lot of these stories show up. So how can the CIA, now that, you know, we're outing these news organizations like Politico today for taking money from USAID, how can the CIA get out their fake stories, John?
I know, right? This is scandalous. It's scandalous and it's un-American. It used to be a common thing for the CIA to plant stories in the U.S. media by recruiting American journalists. That became illegal in 1975, and so they just did the next best thing. They just said, "Hey, Politico, hey, New York Times or Washington Post, you're a patriot. Why don't you put this story in your paper for us, patriot?" And then they ended up doing it. There's a journalist at Bloomberg by the name of Jason Leopold, who's an outstanding investigative journalist. He did a Freedom of Information Act request some years ago asking the CIA's Office of Public Affairs for all email correspondence between the CIA and American journalists. And what he found was several very interesting things. First, a major journalist at NBC and MSNBC was sending his reports, his articles, to the CIA for clearance before he sent them to his own editor at NBC. Inexcusable. But even more interestingly, he found that—
By the way, is that person's name Ken Delanian at
that
NBC?
That person's name is Ken Delanian. Yes, indeed it is. And it's
I had a hunch.
Yes, it was.
Yeah.
But he also found an independent journalist who had written to the CIA saying, "Hey, I uncovered this important story. Do you have a comment?" And the response from the CIA was, Don't you dare report that story. If you do, you are never invited to the CIA Christmas party again, and we will never confirm or deny any story for you. So they don't even have to recruit journalists anymore. They just bully them, or they say, hey, listen, we like you, you like us, we're all friends. Why don't you do this for us?
Do you recall, I think it was last year when Claire Danes talking about her work playing a CIA agent in what is it? Homeland. Homeland, right. Yeah. She said that she had been to some kind of intelligence camp where the CIA was allying itself with Hollywood and the media, and Colbert cut her off. Do you buy that?
Absolutely, yes. The CIA has long had a liaison relationship with Hollywood studios. And just in the last 5 years, they created a branch within their Bureau of Public Affairs or Office of Public Affairs, whose job it is solely to liaise with the Hollywood studios to make the CIA look good. It's exactly the same thing that the FBI has been doing since the 40s.
John, you know, someone in our chat just said, wow, I didn't know Redacted was anti-Israel. And of course, we are not. We're America first. We're pro-America. And I don't want Israeli Mossad agents inside our government and inside of our CIA. Well, you know deeply, you've spoken out about this. So I just want to be clear. We're not anti-Israel. We are anti-other governments inside our government. I'd love to know your thoughts on that. You've been outspoken about how the CIA wouldn't even hold meetings indoors because they were worried about being bugged by Israel. Can you talk about this?
Certainly. We used to meet with Israeli officials in CIA headquarters all the time until the Israelis recruited Jonathan Pollard. They directed him against the American government, and he passed top secret information back to the Israeli Mossad. In addition, the Israelis were always very kind in that they would bring gifts when they would come to CIA headquarters. The problem is those gifts almost always contained listening devices and were packed with batteries. So finally, we had to said, look, you guys, this is not cool. We're not going to allow you in the building again. And so we meet with them at an offsite facility. When I first joined the CIA, like literally on my very first day at the CIA back in January of 1990, the director of security gave all the new employees a briefing. And he said, you know, there are two Israeli intelligence officers that are declared to the CIA and the FBI, one from Mossad, one from Shin Bet. It's a totally normal, common thing that happens. But the FBI was able to identify another 189 undeclared Israeli intelligence officers all across America spying on the United States and trying mightily to infiltrate American defense contractors. So look, either we're going to be brothers in this thing or we're going to be adversaries, but we can't be both.
That sounds like McCarthy era. I mean, is it possible that we now know McCarthy was right. The Venona files proved that when the fall of the Soviet Union, they gave us the proof that McCarthy was actually looking at Soviets who were infiltrated in the U.S. State Department. So is it possible now with this new turnover of Gaza that we do get proof that there has been Israeli spies inside of our government, too?
Oh, we've got the proof. It's just a question of releasing it. And it hasn't been in our interest over the course of all these years to embarrass the Israelis. You know, spying aside, we're very, very close to the Israelis. We give the Israelis just about everything they want. They have the most advanced weaponry. Every time we invent something new, the Israelis are the first to get it. But they're always afraid that we're holding something back, and they just want to know for themselves if we are holding something back. And if they find that we are, they're going to approach us, and they're going to ask us for it. We're not. We're not holding anything back, but this is just the way the Israelis operate. And the reason is, I'm not even saying that I blame the Israelis, but the reason is they have nowhere to go. If they're pushed anywhere, it's going to be into the Mediterranean, and they can't risk that. And so they will do literally anything to maintain their security.
John Kiriakou, I'll get you out of here on this question. Tulsi Gabbard, a lot of pushback on her as it related to Edward Snowden. And, you know, it's kind of amazing to me. You know, she holds that he's an American hero. I hold that he's an American hero. I don't know where you come down on this, but were you surprised by the vehemence and the vitriol from the questioners in that room about Edward Snowden and her position on that?
I was actually. I was especially surprised to see it coming from Republicans. I would expect it from Democrats. And I was surprised for a couple of reasons. And before I even give you the reasons, let me say, I think Ed Snowden is a bona fide American hero, and I was proud of Tulsi Gabbard for standing up for him and standing up for her own beliefs. She would not allow herself to be bullied in these hearings. One of the things that bothered me the most was the use of the word traitor. There is a constitutional definition of the word traitor. It is a person who provides aid and comfort to the enemy in a time of war. He did not provide aid and comfort to the enemy, and we are not in a time of war. There has not been a declaration of war by Congress since December the 8th, 1941. So he's not a traitor. One of the other things that surprised me, and I think this came from Senator Angus King, the independent Democrat from Maine, he said that besides saying that Ed Snowden should be hanging from a tree, he said that Snowden had defected to Russia. That is absolutely not true. He was in the transit lounge of Moscow Airport on his way to Ecuador when John Kerry revoked his passport, and he was not able to fly. So let's keep the honest people honest up there on Capitol Hill.
Oh, right. That's amazing. I have one more question. Now the Trump administration is saying that it's purging the CIA because it wants to focus more on the Western hemisphere than all the meddling that we've been doing in Europe and the Middle East. Do you buy that?
Yeah, in part. I think Donald Trump has been actually pretty clear and pretty consistent about being anti-war at the core of his ideology. I welcome that. There's no reason why we should always be at odds with Russia and China. If Marco Rubio, the new Secretary of State, is correct when he says that we have to accept the inevitability of a multipolar world, I think that we do have to accept the inevitability of a multipolar world. So let's focus on things that are a little bit closer to home. For example, Mexican drug cartels. Why is the CIA at odds with the Drug Enforcement Administration when really, at the end of the day, drugs crossing the border into the United States is a bad thing, and we should all be working together to stop it?
Right. Yeah.
John Kiriakou, we appreciate you joining us. Thank you for your insight. By the way, just remind our audience here, like, what did you blow the whistle on specifically in the corruption in the CIA, just so our audience
was prosecuted for.
Yeah.
I was prosecuted for it. I blew the whistle on the CIA's torture program in 2007. And funny enough, the Bush administration said that I hadn't done anything wrong. It was years later when Barack Obama became president that the Obama administration prosecuted me.
Oh, then on that topic, what are your, I'm sorry, but I'm so interested. What are your thoughts on reopening Guantanamo Bay then? Because I think most of us get scared that we could then reopen the torture program under Bush and Obama and have innocent people in there. So, but of course, there's bad guys we do never want to see again. How do we keep an eye on that doesn't turn into that?
Yeah, I'm strongly opposed to doing anything with Guantanamo other than closing it. And in terms of the bad guys, pursuing the bad guys, I think really the right thing to do is quite simple. You do what the Constitution tells us to do. You charge them with a crime. You give them their day in court and allow them to face a jury of their peers. If they're guilty and we can prove that they're guilty, then we incarcerate them. But putting them in a no man's land, in a limbo at Guantanamo, isn't going to work for anybody.
Yeah. And what do you think, how can we know as Americans? Because we didn't know what was happening to innocent people on our tax dollar, on our dime. What do we look for as journalists, even?
That's a great point. And it's something that really was not addressed for years under either George W. Bush or Barack Obama. You know, the answer is a difficult one. For all intents and purposes, Guantanamo is off limits for almost all journalists. And so we have to rely on the congressional oversight committees. But the congressional oversight committees really have turned into little more than cheerleaders for the various elements of the deep state. Well, without the oversight committees, all we have left are journalists. It makes our job that much harder.
All right, well, let's stick with it. Thank you so much for that insight. I really appreciate it.
My pleasure.
Thank you, John.
Thank you.
Great to see you.
Thank you.
Thanks so much.
My pleasure.
We'll be watching the CIA being gutted. It'll be interesting to see about all of that. We're going to talk about Gaza next, and we're going to deep dive what it means for the United States. Will the United States military need to take over Gaza? Many Trump supporters, MAGA supporters, say, hey, we didn't sign up for this. We didn't want the United States involved in the Middle East. Why are we going to be taking over Gaza? What's going on here? There was surprise, apparently, from inside the Trump administration to these comments with Netanyahu. Apparently, the Israelis were shocked by it. So there's a lot to unpack here. What does it mean for the Palestinians? What does it mean for Hamas, which is still strong and in tunnels underneath Palestinian lands and hasn't really been hurt at all in this? So we'll talk about all of that in just a second. But first,
we'd like to remind you that Redacted is sponsored by BiOptimize, which is a great way for you to look into getting magnesium into your diet. Magnesium is an essential ingredient to manage stress, maintain a calm, balanced mood, and also make sure you optimize your sleep and recovery from whatever it is you do, hopefully regular workouts and movement, and then your body recovers with the help of magnesium. In fact, most people are deficient, which can lead to poor stress response, fatigue, and even poor sleep quality, but Magnesium Breakthrough helps balance your levels so you can better handle your New Year's resolution. It's a unique blend of magnesium citrate, glycinate, taurate, and more, and it ensures maximum absorption and utilization by your cells. So you can go to buyoptimizers.com/redacted. Enter the code redacted and you'll get 10% off your order. Plus, you can make sure that you have a subscription so you get free gifts and make sure your monthly supply is guaranteed. So again, check them out at buyoptimizers.com/redacted. There's really no health influencer that doesn't agree that everyone needs magnesium as an essential part of their day. So again, buyoptimizers.com/redacted and use the promo code redacted.
Well, Trump just shocked the world over Gaza. Was it a bold move or is it totally insane? Some are calling it the Nakba 2.0. Friend of the show, George Galloway, who hosts the Motes show, just called it Trump's Nakba. Is that too harsh? We'll discuss, just for some context here, the original Nakba happened in 1948 when Israelis killed, displaced hundreds of thousands of Palestinians. Britain, of course, the United Nations worked hand in glove to basically come up with the plan. I'm simplifying it, of course, but the Arabs rejected it. So, but the United Nations and Britain said, yeah, this is what we're going to do. So they went along with it and did it. But it didn't matter. They were ethnically cleansed. They were removed from their lands. So are we facing now a repeat of that? Has it already happened? What comes next? Is the President Trump's quote, here it is, by the way, that just sent shockwaves through the world. The fallout has been fast and furious. Everyone trying to parse out what the president meant when he said this yesterday about Gaza. Listen.
The U.S. will take over the Gaza Strip, and we will do a job with it, too. We'll own it and be responsible for dismantling all of the dangerous unexploded bombs and other weapons on the site, level the site, and get rid of the destroyed buildings, level it out, create an economic development that will supply unlimited numbers of jobs and housing for the people of the area.
Where exactly are you suggesting that they should go? And two, are you saying they should return after it's rebuilt? And if not, who do you envision living there?
I envision world people living there, the world's people. I think you'll make that into an international, unbelievable place. I think the potential in the Gaza Strip is unbelievable. And I think the entire world, representatives from all over the world, will be there and they'll live there. Palestinians also. Palestinians will live there. Many people will live there.
So he said that, but then a little, you know, separately, Peter Doocy asked about specifically about the Palestinians from Fox News. He asked this question and Trump kind of gave a totally different answer, I guess. Listen.
Peter, would Palestinians have the right to return to Gaza if they left while the rebuilding was happening?
It would be my hope that we could do something really nice, really good, where they wouldn't want to return. Why would they want to return? The place has been hell. It's been one of the meanest, toughest places on earth.
So
and Netanyahu is sitting there saying, yes, it's mean and tough. We are mean and tough on them.
Mean and tough. All right. According to sources I've spoken with in Tel Aviv, Israeli reaction, they were shocked by this. They didn't see this coming. I didn't see this coming at all. And according to Real Clear Politics, Trump's own staff didn't see this coming. Ryan Grimm is the co-founder of the independent media website DropSite News, co-host of Counterpoints on YouTube. And Ryan joins us now for some perspective on all of this. Ryan, I know you've been covering this deeply. It's now you've had like 24 hours to kind of digest this. It seems like the Trump White House was kind of caught blindsided by this.
Which is funny because Trump himself said, this is not a decision that I have taken lightly. You know, this is, you know, the result of serious deliberation. Whatever those serious deliberations were, they apparently did not include senior administration officials, or, as you just pointed out, by the look of his face, Benjamin Netanyahu. It doesn't appear like that even came up in the meeting between the two of them. Since then, Rubio has made some interesting kind of cleanup comments, and I think we'll probably see, you know, for as long as Rubio is serving as Secretary of State, this will be one of the roles that he plays. The way that Rubio tried to clean up, the way that Rubio tried to reframe what Trump said, he said it was not meant in a hostile manner. It was meant in a generous manner. And actually, as I was rewatching it just now, you can always tell when Trump moves from what he's reading or the teleprompter to his own language.
Right.
What was written down clearly was, we will take over Gaza. And then he added, you know, and we will own it and it will be amazing, something like that. And then he goes back to reading again and he says, and, you know, we will, you know, oversee the reconstruction. And so if you try to piece together what was written and match it with what Rubio was saying, which Rubio said, it was a offer made out of generosity, not hostility, that we are willing, the U.S. is willing to do a lot of the reconstruction work to, and there are enormous, like untold numbers of unexploded ordnance, you know, throughout Gaza. Like that's a fact. Like that does need to be dealt with. So what he's saying is we will do that. We will do that demolition work and we will do the reconstruction work. And Rubio even implied and even set out
that
they'd be coming back.
The unexploded.
Yeah, who dropped? Yeah. No, that's a good question. So Trump was there with Netanyahu. He could have asked Netanyahu if he had any idea, you know, where, you know, how this became a demolition site. Or where all of this ordnance
came
from.
Basically, he called it a hell hole.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think it was a natural disaster, you know, in just an unfortunate circumstance, which is the way that he was talking about. And to hear him talk about it with Netanyahu sitting right there was a little extra deranged. But so to take Trump seriously, the problem with his suggestion there is that it's not completely uninhabitable. Hundreds of thousands of Palestinians can return to their homes, and their homes are not destroyed. There are also other places within Gaza that people could go. They could also go to the West Bank. They could go to the Negev Desert. To your point, who did this destruction? Israel did this destruction. Therefore, why are they asking Egypt and Jordan? And he's mentioned maybe there'll be some other places that'll analysts, like if people need to be moved while there's reconstruction, it's Israel's responsibility to house them somewhere. And then, you know, they're going to have a right of return to Gaza because Israel doesn't want them there.
So many things to unpack here because Hamas, right? This is at the heart of it, right? So Hamas, according to sources I've spoken with, is largely still intact, functioning. Mm-hmm. So is the United States now going to be a police force there to go and try to stop Hamas? This is why so many MAGA supporters and so many Trump supporters, I see them in our chat right now saying, I don't want us in the Middle East at all. Get out of the Middle East.
Right.
Yeah.
We didn't sign up for this. So are American forces now going to be involved in trying to root out Hamas?
One of Trump's attractive qualities to a lot of MAGA supporters was his willingness to call out the Republican establishment for its adventurism in the Middle East, specifically the Iraq War, to then come full circle and say, we're going to go back in, which he said, he was asked directly, does this mean U.S. boots on the ground? And Trump said, if that's what it means, then yes. To Rubio today said, no, of course not. We're not doing that. So, you know, you make of it what you will, but like, he's still the president. He still said it, but you're right.
Right.
If he's trying to get 1.7 million people out, who don't want to leave because they're being told they're not going to be allowed back in, then you have to take them out violently. And that means troops, and that means casualties.
I've tried to come around this, to envision this utopia that he has. Maybe for anyone who's ever been to Dubai or Sharm el-Sheikh, and you see these cities that are being built up as international places of travel and commerce, and they're beautiful, and people who live in those countries are really proud of those places. So there is maybe this idea, because it's beachfront property, that it could be this beautiful tourism mecca that is redone and controlled by the United States and then handed off. It's really hard. It's hard, right? Because you know that the two-state solution is going to be fought in a bloody way in perpetuity. And there's this like utopia that seems so unlikely. And so most of us just don't know what to do with those two conflicting visions. Plus the idea that if Trump or one of his successors is not a Republican, the Democrats would just give it up and go back to fighting. So I think that's what I'm chewing on. Are you also digesting something like that?
You're right. Interestingly, like there is a path. Like Hamas has said that it is willing to be just a basically rebranded element of a technocratic government, and it'd be willing. You know, there are indications that under the right circumstances they'd be willing to disarm and engage in the political process. And then if you have Saudi Arabia, UAE, Qatar, funding the redevelopment of Gaza, and you have, the Palestinians would love nothing more than to have, serious reconstruction funded in a peaceful way and in a way that allows them to benefit as well as everyone else in the world. Go ahead, come visit Gaza. That just like you visit Doha or Dubai. But you're right. The obstacle there is Israel. Israel doesn't want to see that. Israel is currently not allowing in basic humanitarian aid, let alone like even bulldozers or the kinds of things that you would need to begin the, taking steps in that direction. So that is an impasse that Trump would have to use political capital to get through. And then, exactly what happens when somebody else comes.
Great. Let me just follow up on this, because you speak about humanitarian aid, and then in the same day, the White House announces that it will no longer participate with certain United Nations organizations such as UNRWA, which is the main organization that has funneled aid into there. And Israel says they helped plan and execute October 7th, so they're our main enemy.
Yeah.
And so Trump then does something exactly what they would want. And so do you think that that's possibly something he gave Israel in order to work this deal or something?
He's it's interesting. He's constantly giving Israel things. In the same press conference, he said that within 4 weeks, he's going to decide whether or not he's going to allow Israel to annex the West Bank, which is, the whole thing is, these are wild just constructions to even think about, like who's the United States to allow Israel to annex, territory that they have no right to, or either way, he's saying he's going to make that decision. Miriam Adelson gave him more than $100 million, and it was reported that that when she gave it to him, that was her demand, that he allow for the annexation of the West Bank, just like she previously demanded that he move the capital, the embassy from Tel Aviv to Jerusalem, which he did, and he's very proud of. He also brags about how he quote unquote gave them the Golan Heights, which they've since expanded their control over. So it's this given push and pull where he's consistently giving them things that Democrats would never even dream of giving them, yet also then pushing them in the other direction, like pushing them to do a ceasefire. When if Kamala Harris were elected, we'd still have the low grade bombing campaign going on. Presumably, there was no indication that she was willing to use any pressure or political capital to get to a ceasefire. So it's a very confused and confusing moment.
Yeah.
I mean, I'm trying to be positive here, because at the heart of it, Trump, we know, negotiated a ceasefire. So there's a ceasefire in place. People are not dying largely in the way that they were before.
Well, they are in Lebanon.
Yes. But I mean, right now in Gaza, so taking the wins where we can get them, small, like incremental wins. So, but, you know, it's also the criticism of Trump is that he usually ends up going with the thing that the last person in the room has told him. Friend of the show, Colonel Douglas McGregor, who worked for Trump, said that this was a big frustration, that the last person to speak to Trump is where Trump usually went with his decision-making process. And I couldn't help but thinking if we, you know, Jared Kushner and his involvement. We know Jared Kushner's involvement in the in this area and had vowed to turn Gaza into a Riviera. And that this all this waterfront property could be very valuable. And so did he have his ear before Benjamin Netanyahu came to town? Was Jared Kushner in the room, like talking about this utopia in Gaza that could be built? There's memes floating around in Israeli press today of Trump Tower Gaza. Like, you know,
there's been reporting that Jared's idea was part of the mix here. That Jared has been talking to him about this, and that he and Witkoff and Trump are talking about it like the real estate guys that they are. You know, Trump, it's all fundamentally who he is. You heard him talking about North Korea, I bet, recently, where he was talking about all the amazing coastline that North Korea's got. He can't unsee dollar signs and waterfront real estate. And so, the idea that he's going to be able to successfully move them to Egypt and Jordan is an utter fantasy. Like, it's not like asking Mexico to send 10,000 National Guard to the border. You're asking those governments to likely collapse. So, and no government is going to willingly strike a deal that would likely lead to their own collapse. There's no amount of pressure you could put on somebody to get them to do that.
We'll get you out of here on this, which is Scott Adams' tweet today. I'm just curious your thoughts. I think a lot of people right now watching our show, I can just see it in the chat room here. A lot of people are saying, you know, kind of struggling with this, right? I don't think it's cut and dry. It's not cut and dry. If you think it's cut and dry, I think you're an idiot, quite frankly. But Scott Adams tweeted this. He said, "I hate that sleeping on this changed my opinion." His first reaction, he said, is, "Hell no, I hate everything about this." You know, the United States going into Gaza, taking over Gaza, funding Gaza, all of that. Then he said, you know, "I slept on it." Then he said, "Current opinion, Trump just ended a perma-war between Hamas and Israel by informing them that they will no longer have a common border, one way or another. It's not a bluff, but it will have the effect of sharpening the thinking of everyone in the region. I'd expect some frantic counter-offer." So he's basically saying that in many ways the United States is playing bad cop here, where now you'll have the Arabs and Israelis kind of coming together saying, "Yeah, we really don't want the U.S. here. So let's come to some sort of agreement." Is he playing bad cop, Trump?
I do think Adams is correct there that you don't want to necessarily judge what Trump says by what Trump says, because you don't know whether or not what he says is actually going to become reality, or if he's just saying it because he has some other motives going on. And in this case, he may be trying to reset the negotiations. The key, we're coming up to the key second phase of the ceasefire agreement, and there is a ton of pressure from Netanyahu's right, and I think Netanyahu's own impulses are to not move into the second phase of the ceasefire and to restart the war. Netanyahu's been pretty clear that would actually be his preference here. He doesn't have a day after plan for Gaza, and he worries about his own political future, and just, you know, low grade continuing the war forever is a preferable political outcome for him. That would condemn, you know, hostages and captives that are still in Gaza to death. Aside from the absolute calamity that it would, you know, bring back to Gaza, and there is a lot of hope, I think, among the Trump's circle that wants to see a broader Mideast deal, that Trump will figure out a way to make sure that Netanyahu does not blow up this ceasefire deal. So is he flipping the table over there? Who knows? Like, it's, you know, we'll see, you know, where this goes, but yeah.
It's crazy. I mean, so much disagreement in our chat room right now. I mean, it's just like Linda says on this point, Trump is terribly wrong. Karen Carpenter in our chat says, "I'm so disgusted."
Yeah. We're not sending troops to Gaza. Like, there'll be a riot before anybody agrees to send troops to Gaza.
And Karen says
to get Palestinians out of Gaza. Yeah.
Right.
And then others saying Trump's a genius. This plan's a genius. So there's a lot of disagreement on this right now. Ryan Grimm, co-founder of the independent media website DropSite News, co-host of Counterpoints. Ryan, thanks so much. I think we're all trying to parse this out today. Thanks so much for joining us.
Yeah.
Thanks for having me on.
Thanks, Ryan. Appreciate it.
And I want to say that all opinions here, I think, are valid. You know, we're all kind of scared and confused and blindsided. So, yeah, go ahead, Phil.
Something my daughter brought up last night when we were talking about this, and first off, she brought up like that, you know, like it's not the lamb that's killing Palestinians, you know. It's like but the other thing she brought up was like, let's say they do that. They bomb all the Palestinians, they build this like utopic city. My daughter was like, what kind of person goes there and visits? Like, who's going to want to go and be like, hey, we're going to go visit the place where all of those Palestinians died on for vacation.
Mm-hmm. Like, well, you know, Israel built their national parks over. You can go sit on park benches in beautiful parks now, the Israeli Park Service. And there's no mention of the villages where those parks sit, by the way. There might be an old olive tree that's still there. You'll be sitting on the graves and houses of Palestinians when you go to
Palestinian
visit these
villages.
Parks. Anyway, we got a lot to unpack on that.
That exists now.
Yeah. All right. We got more news to get to here. We're going to talk about Trudeau. Did Justin Trudeau just lie to President Trump about those 10,000 forces that they're going to put on the border of Canada to protect those troops? Protect the border from illegal aliens pouring into the United States and fentanyl coming into the United States. Did Trudeau lie to Trump's face? We're going to talk about that in a second. But first, let me tell you about NMN. So this is something I take every day now. It's become a part of my routine for the past like month and a half. And NMN from Black Forest is a supplement known to dramatically improve health and longevity by serving as a precursor to NAD+. Now, Dr. David Sinclair was recently on the Joe Rogan podcast, and he's a neuroscientist, a tenured professor at Stanford University School of Medicine. He explained why Big Pharma is trying to hide NMN from you because it's incredibly effective and they can't make money off of it. Watch.
I also take supplements. And in fact, most of my colleagues are in the field of aging or anti-aging, as people call it. So I take NMN every morning.
What is NMN?
Good question. So let me take a quick step back.
Sure.
So about 20 years ago, Lenny Garenti and a team of us at MIT discovered a set of genes that controls aging. And what they do is they protect all organisms on the planet, plants, bacteria, humans, from deterioration and disease. They're like the Pentagon. They sense when we're hungry, sense when we're exercising, and they send out the troops to defend us. And so we think that these genes are responsible for the effects of dieting and exercise, which is great. Which what that means is we can now mimic that with molecules.
I feel like I should make a shopping list.
So anyway, you could use it to grow your nails, all of that. Anyway, I've got my NMN. It boosts your energy. It does help recover from post-workout. I take it after my morning gym workout. It's a vital part of maintaining a healthy lifestyle. Get it while you can right now before these big pharma companies try to patent it and turn it into a prescription drug only. The FDA has been trying to take this thing away. So we have an exclusive offer for you right now. Go to blackforestsupplements.com/redacted. You can scan the QR code right there on your screen. And for the next 48 hours, you can buy two, get one free. Buy two, get one free. I'm telling you, this is fantastic. I take this as part of my daily supplement regimen. So stock up while you can. It's NMN, buy two, get one free at blackforestsupplements.com/redacted for the next 48 hours. Did Canadian Prime Minister Justin Trudeau just lie to President Trump right to his face about providing 10,000 troops to the northern border in order to secure that border, stop the flow of illegal immigrants and fentanyl into the United States? So did Trudeau lie to President Trump? Well, let's find out. David Creighton is an independent journalist. He also writes at the Post Millennial. He's been following this story, and it kind of went quiet there for a few days. Trudeau kind of making this agreement, put tariffs off for 30 days or so, and everyone seemed to be happy about this. But what's really going on behind the scenes, David?
Well, everybody was relatively happy because as much as this was about Donald Trump's wishes for the Canadian-U.S. border, a lot of Canadians said, well, thank God something seems to be happening. It looks like Trudeau's finally going to do something because he's being pressured to do so by Donald Trump. But good good on him. At least we're going to get some changes at the border. Now, Trudeau promised specifically that he would send 10,000, quote, frontline personnel to the Canada-U.S. border. He promised to fight organized crime in conjunction with the Americans. He promised to label the cartels, the criminal cartels that engage in drug and human smuggling, as terrorist organizations. These are all promises that he made to avert a tariff that was supposed to start on February 1st, and in the hopes that this tariff would be taken away completely after 30 days of, shall we say, responsible behavior from Justin Trudeau in Canada. And that's what Trudeau needed to do, was to demonstrate that he was doing this. Almost immediately, there was crosstalk that didn't really make any sense. There was a disconnection because Trudeau was saying, well, we had this in mind all along with our $1.3 billion border security plan. And I'm saying, like hell you did, because there's no provision in that plan for 10,000 frontline personnel. That was never even considered. And as I've said time and time again, this is a six-year plan where most of the money is being spent in the fifth and sixth year, not now, not today, when Donald Trump wants the money spent. So there was something very suspicious about this immediately. And when I saw frontline personnel, I said, well, what are frontline personnel? Are you talking about the RCMP? Are you talking about the Canadian Armed Forces? Are you talking about border security agents? Are you talking about first responders? God only knows, because Trudeau got away with defining it as frontline personnel instead of just saying military personnel, soldiers, troops, police, whatever. He got away with this weasel word, which means absolutely nothing. And what is so frustrating, Clayton, is that nobody's asking the question right now to Justin Trudeau as to, what do you mean by frontline personnel? Where are these 10,000 people going to come from? Because yesterday, the Minister of National Defense in Canada stated emphatically that these 10,000 people would not be military. So where are they going to come from? The RCMP? No, we don't have 10,000 RCMP officers to send to the border. We don't have 10,000 extra Canadian border security agents to send to the border. So what is he talking about? Is he referring to a number that's already out there and he's going to supplement it with more people? This is deliberate obfuscation, typical of this prime minister. I can see trouble ahead, because Donald Trump is not going to fall for this one. He didn't fall for the border security plan over 6 years. He demanded something now. He demanded action right now. Justin Trudeau doesn't seem to be bringing that up. And this is the problem when the House of Commons is suspended, when Parliament is suspended. We don't have daily question period. We don't have an opportunity for the opposition to stand up and say, what do you mean by 10,000 people, 10,000 right. frontline personnel? Can you define that? Where are they coming from? We need answers today. And of course, Trudeau is just continuing to evade the questions, which unfortunately aren't even being asked.
I mean, when you look at the United States, in America right now, we have about 20,000 ICE employees in the U.S. Now, only about 7,000 of them are frontline agents, 7,100, according to the latest numbers. So about 7,100 agents that go out in the field and make arrests. The rest are a lot of support staff, employees to sort of facilitate that. Then you have about 1,000 or so special agents. So 20,000 in the United States. Trudeau knowingly, I mean, it looks like he lied on purpose to Trump. And now the chickens are going to come home to roost, because Trump has said, if we're going to give you 30 days to pull this off, otherwise, I think that the tariffs will become even more severe if you don't manage to pull this off in 30 days. So what do you think is going to happen in the next 20 or so days? That's really all he has left.
Well, the only thing I can be optimistic about is that the House resumes sitting within the next couple of weeks. because there is a constitutional challenge to Trudeau's prorogation or the suspension of Parliament. That comes up at the Canadian Supreme Court on February 14th, which, you know, not only Valentine's Day, but it's the third anniversary of Trudeau invoking the Emergencies Act. So it's quite a historic day now in Canada. So the Supreme Court might order the House of Commons back in the session and say the prorogation was illegal. It was unconstitutional. Trudeau had no reason to do that. If that happens, we're going to have an early election, because all of the signs now are that all of the opposition parties want Trudeau out. They want the Liberals out because this is a lame duck government that just can't negotiate on behalf of Canada. And I don't think this latest incident is going to help Trudeau at all or the Liberal government, suggesting we're going to be bolstering border security and then not really doing that. So that's something to be optimistic about. At the very worst, we're going to have a spring election. I think even the new Democratic Party has decided it can no longer prop up this government anymore. So I think a new election might be the only saving grace. Alberta Premier Danielle Smith was interviewed yesterday, and she warned Trudeau, don't go back on your word here. Follow through with what you're doing, because she worked extremely hard to get Donald Trump's attention. She managed to get the tariff on energy reduced from 25 to 10%. She managed to really capture the attention of a lot of Americans who said, here's a responsible political leader in Canada who wants to do the right thing. And I think that is another reason to be optimistic. But worst case scenario, March 1st comes around and we're struck with 25%, possibly double tariff. And I've looked at the products that are going to be hit not only by the U.S. tariff, but by the counter retaliatory tariffs by Canada. This could increase the price of grocery products by 30 to 50% overnight. Things are bad enough in this country where people are going to food banks and soup kitchens just to survive. But now it's going to push the price of groceries out of reach. This could be a Great Depression with a capital G and a capital D. This is catastrophic for this country. And it's not going to be good for the U.S. either. I think there's a general consensus now that this is not going to be a party for anybody. And especially as oil and gas prices go in the United States, this is going to push up the price of gas easily by a dollar or two a gallon overnight. Even if it goes through as a 10% tariff. I've never been a fan of trade wars. I've always been a free trader. I don't like protectionism. I think it's bad for everybody. That's one of the major causes of the Great Depression in the 1930s was protectionism. I thought we learned that lesson. We need to move beyond this. Canada and the U.S. are the best of friends. This is the dumbest trade war in history. We have fought together in every war except Vietnam, and we have always been allies, the strongest allies. Our military are joined at the hip. Economically, we're very, very close. We're the U.S.'s biggest trading partner. It's time to get beyond this, but we need an honest prime minister who's not going to lie about what he has promised to do. And I am utterly convinced Justin Trudeau is lying, as he is ought to do in so many occasions.
Well, I think the bombshell here, David, I'll let you out of here on this, is that there's been no movement at all with these 10,000 forces. Well, like, where are they? What's going on here? You would think by now that there would be massive mobilization underway to make this happen. It doesn't seem to be happening at all.
Well, it's not. And that's why when I read this yesterday, this announcement from the Minister of National Defense, I was utterly shocked. Because if they're not coming from the Department of Defense, if they're not coming from the Canadian Armed Forces, where are they coming from? And he's talking about drones. We already made a huge mistake with the drones. The RCMP bought a bunch of Chinese drones that we can't even use. So why is Bill Blair, the Minister of Defense, talking about drones and not human beings? We need boots on the ground. That's an understanding. We know that. That is what Donald Trump is expecting. To tell you the truth, Clayton, that's what most Canadians are expecting. We were anticipating some absolutely bold moves here on border security, not because Trudeau really wants to do it, but because he had to do it. Now, if he thinks he can get away with this, I think he's even a more superficial individual than I have previously imagined.
Imagine that. David Creighton joining us from Canada today, always keeping them honest up there. Fascinating story, and I think this has gone quiet in the wake of everything that's going on in the Middle East right now and Trump's comments over Gaza and all of that, but we still have this massive tariff impending doom facing Canada right now and the United States. So thank you for this. David, great to see you as always.
Thank you, Clayton. We'll see you again soon.
Thanks, David. Appreciate it. All right. Trudeau lying to the United States. What a shock. What a shock.
All right. Well, we're going to keep talking about Canada because we have a bombshell story where the government of Alberta has admitted that the COVID pandemic was all wrong. They got it all wrong. And in fact, it was the federal government that made them torture their own people. We're going to talk to Regina Watil about that in a second. But first, we want to tell you that we have a store. If you want to signal to the world that you knew all these conspiracies before they became theories, you're in fact a conspiracy knower.
And our
you
America,
can find yeah, a America. Shirt like that, plus our America First t-shirt, more. Truth is not hate speech. That isn't a mug. So check out what we've got for you there so you can signal to the world that you know things that the government has hidden, but you've known them all along. Go to redactedstore.com. And check out our buffet of merchandise.
Like our the Fed shirt and our communism equals starvation. My son, who's 14, is asking the difference, you know, like, can you explain communism to me, Dad? Like, and I'm going through explaining how, it's absolutely the control of the means of production and it leads to starvation.
Well, that's too much for a shirt. So that's why we just put that simplistic saying that communism equals starvation because it's true. So check it all out.
Wear it to your Thanksgiving. If you've got any Democrats in your family, wear it to your Democratic family.
Well, Easter's coming up. So yes, this is, isn't it so springy and appropriate?
Right.
All right.
It's renewal. It's renewal.
Okay.
Groundhog.
Well, the province of Alberta in Canada published a damning report about the COVID pandemic, basically admitting they got it all wrong. The vaccines, the masks, the lockdowns. It's an amazing admission from a government agency. Of course, not everyone wants to hear it, but Dr. Regina Watil read through it, and she's the author of the book Fisman's Fraud, which exposed how the government in Canada used hate science to put excessive pandemic measures in place, basically torture them. I spoke to her earlier about the bombshells in this report. Watch. Regina, thank you for joining us on Redacted again. Let us know, as a Canadian, how you feel about this after-action report where the government is basically admitting that there were mistakes and, oops, we made mistakes with your life.
Well, I'm actually very thankful for this report. I'm actually excited because now we have dialogue for the first time. So as you know, Natalie, we've had a lot of censorship in Canada. So this really is the first time that views outside the dominant narrative have been explored in any official capacity. So even though this report was done for Alberta, it does apply to much of Canada. So I'm actually excited.
Now, one of your main assessments is that local provinces had very little power and most of the driving force came from the federal government, which your amazing book talks about was based on hate science or junk science. So is there this, well, what do you make of that, that the federal government was in charge and that local provinces had very little power, even if they wanted to base their decisions off of real science?
Well, that was made very clear in this report that it was the federal government in the driver's seat for the province's response. But it also said that Alberta was more than happy to give the federal government the keys, right? So the Alberta government did have its own pre-existing pandemic response plan, and they just tossed that out. And instead, their decisions were ultimately based on federal and international recommendations. And you'll find this is true for other provinces as well. So it begs the question, you know, whose interests were really being served? I was not surprised by that at all. I was happy to see it in the report.
And so how can regulators, you know, make any other decision if there's just this? I mean, that's almost like a king has made the decisions and the people have no choices. Was it like in the United States where certain provinces had maybe better regulations to live under than others?
I think in Canada it was bad and then worse. It was just awful everywhere, right? So I think like Quebec was extremely bad because they had curfews and they went, you know, they went crazy with their restrictions. Ontario was also very, very bad, but so was BC. So across the board, I think it was not good here. I guess it was a little better in like Alberta. Alberta has always been somewhat better, and that's why my daughter ended up going there during the pandemic, because it was just too brutal here in Ontario. Now, for the regulators, though, oh, go ahead. No, go ahead.
Go ahead. Yes, go ahead and talk about how regulators were, you know, actively sought to intimidate, threaten, and discipline anyone who went against the consensus.
Right. So when I read the report, there was two very damning chapters. And one basically offered a scathing takedown of Alberta's regulatory bodies. And then we'll talk about the other one later, which is basically the vaccines, when it talked about the safety and effectiveness of the vaccines. So that's where the report hit the hardest. So the regulatory bodies includes bodies like the Colleges of Physicians and Surgeons, as well as other colleges that regulate healthcare professionals. And they have the ability to take away one's license to practice. And so in the report, they kind of came across as like mindless parrots. So I'll quote the report. It said, they passively accepted and followed other bodies without critically examining the information, thereby perpetuating a false consensus. So the report goes on to say, yeah.
That's very damning.
Very damning. Yeah. They go on to say that any information that they deemed went outside what they thought was the consensus, they called that misinformation, even if that information was correct or accurate. And then the report goes into some depth about talking about their overreach. And here you see that they've acted basically like thugs. So I'll just summarize what the report actually said. It says, regulators actively sought to intimidate, threaten, and discipline medical professionals. The chilling effect was pervasive, instilling a climate of fear and caution that deterred providers from utilizing their full expertise. That interfered in the patient-physician relationship and often obstructed healthcare providers from performing their duties in good faith. So that's pretty damning. And the report even says that not only did they fail to protect the public, but they actually made the response worse. So this is scathing.
Yes. And so how can anyone say, well, we didn't know any better. The government told us the truth. We had to behave this way. Anyone in Canada who says this now, you can peel back all the science about masking, about the vaccines, about the science of lockdowns. We've done so in depth. But this is in one fell swoop saying we were coerced into not being able to know what the science would have told us if we were allowed to know it. So I don't know how anyone now can say the federal government was acting in good faith, right?
Oh, yeah. This is pretty bad. I can't see how any of the regulators are going to like this report. It really comes down hard on them. It does, of course, put the federal government in the driver's seat. Yeah, it's pretty scathing. They do make recommendations based on what I just said. They recommend strengthening physician autonomy, and they do recommend putting in some safeguards so that physicians do not suffer politically motivated disciplinary actions, which is what they believe happened.
Right. And so does it discuss the science of masking versus masking mandates?
Yes, it goes through all the things that you know, you guys have been covering for quite some time. Regarding masking, they say that the science did not support mask mandates and that it didn't show that they were effective at all in reducing infections. They talked about non-pharmaceutical interventions such as lockdowns and closures, school closures and other restrictions. And they said that that was really based on very weak evidence and it was more like ideologically driven. They said that those measures were ineffective. They had high costs, both socially and economically. They had minimal benefits and diminished returns. So the more you piled on, the less benefits, the more harms.
Yes.
Yeah. They also talked about how natural immunity was downplayed during the pandemic. And They accused Alberta Health of spreading disinformation about how the vaccines had superior immunity. And they said that they even stuck to that disinformation when there was ample evidence that they were wrong. So a lot of the things that you guys have been covering.
Right. It's amazing to see that written here, an admission by province. And so what can be done with something like this? Can you send this up to the federal government and say, you must never do this again and you must admit to it? Because we've seen the tribunals around Justin Trudeau saying his, you know, power grabs were fine. We were fine with it. So, you know, is there any way to run this up the flagpole and get an admission like this from the federal government, especially now that Trudeau is a lame duck?
Well, one thing that the report doesn't get into, Natalie, is how they were able to get away with what they did. Like I said, there was already plans in place and they tossed them aside. And what's to say they won't do the same the next time? So the report doesn't get into that, which is one of the criticisms I've had, because in Canada, one of the biggest issues has been the capture of our judiciary. Okay, so throughout the pandemic, Chief Justice Wagner of the Supreme Court of Canada, he met routinely with Justin Trudeau's Attorney General behind closed doors to talk about how to implement pandemic measures into the courts. And so the Supreme Court even implemented its own vaccine mandates at the same time Justin Trudeau announced mandates for the federal public service. So they, you know, they were basically on the same page there. And then in the courts, they misuse something called judicial notice routinely. So judicial notice is when the courts deem something to be an undisputed truth. So they would look at statements like the pandemic was a serious threat to all Canadians and the vaccines are safe and effective. And they would deem this as a fact, undisputed. And when you do that, you basically let the government get away with everything.
Right.
There's another, it gets even worse, Natalie, that recently the Attorney General was on X and he was bragging that since Justin Trudeau was elected in 2015, his government has appointed 825 judges across Canada, and Canada only has 960 appointed judges sitting. So there's an issue, because you do see that we don't have an impartial judiciary, and it's really hard to say that they are independent of the executive branch. So, I mean,
yeah, I think that was clear when his emergency powers were litigated, that we investigated ourselves and this was fine. You know, the way that the Toronto Sun is covering this is that it was just kind of mismanagement, like bad government. I find that to be a gross understatement of the effect that it had in people's lives. Like you mentioned, you couldn't ask yourself, maybe I'm strong enough to go without this vaccine that they're telling me is so strong. That was not allowed. The masking, the lockdowns. Do they mention the Fisman study saying the unvaccinated are a threat to the vaccinated?
They didn't. And actually, when you go through the report, the modeling section, I think that was their weakest section. And they really completely missed the mark. The report failed to acknowledge the role that manipulated statistics and bogus modeling played in the pandemic. So that was mostly used for three things, right? It was used for propaganda. It was used to justify unconstitutional measures. And it was used basically to help authorities skirt accountability. Right? It was like, it's because we were following the science. So the follow the science scheme, that was basically a statistical game that helped them get away with everything. So it really needs to be addressed, because they can do that again in the future. So that is one thing I think they really need to look at a little bit more, because it played a huge role. And even this task force acknowledged that we're going to see a resurgence in the modeling use when the next emergency or pandemic rolls around. So,
right. It's so interesting that about 2 weeks ago, the Wall Street Journal published this big wet kiss for Bill Gates, in which he goes on video and says, we're not ready for the next pandemic, and we can't be if we keep reviewing what happened over the last one. So this is something that people like Bill Gates absolutely do not want. We should not be looking backwards. We should just be going forwards. I think I don't need to point out what's extremely wrong with a statement like that, but what's your reaction to it?
Well, obviously they don't want anybody to review what happened, because you and I and all your viewers know that they never really had evidence supporting any of these harsh measures. The evidence was always actually against these vaccines. It was always against these lockdowns and school closures. And so if you review it, that's going to come out. And I think that they're very scared now because of, you know, the administration change in the U.S. Like, we're all very excited. Well, not all of us. The ones who want the truth out are very excited here in Canada, because we're hoping, it will kind of come up here as well, that we can ride that wave. So I think they should be extremely worried, right?
Yeah.
And you do see, like you said, there's a lot of letters have gone out now asking Daniel Smith to basically dismiss this report. So they're very afraid.
On what grounds would you dismiss the report?
Well, there's three agencies came out. We had the Alberta Medical Association, the Canadian Medical Association, and the Children's Pediatric Society. They wrote letters. And they basically, the whole thrust is, well, this report goes outside the consensus view, so it's dangerous misinformation. So they really don't have much grounds. They just don't like it, right? No, it's not an argument. We don't like it, so dismiss it. But there's even another guy. There's a fellow here in Canada that was paid millions of dollars to fight misinformation. And he spearheaded a group letter signed by dozens of professionals, including doctors, and they asked also to get rid of this report, to dismiss the report. But when you look at this fellow, his name is Timothy Caulfield, and he is a law professor in Alberta. And he has no real scientific training, but in 2020, he co-founded this organization called Science Up First, to fight misinformation and to promote scientific understanding. And he's been getting a lot of money to, you know, basically push the government narrative. So we have a letter spearheaded by him to dismiss this report. So that's been interesting.
Well, you can follow Dr. Regina Watil on X and get her assessment of this, because she's been peeling back this onion. If you want to search for it yourself, we'll link to it in the newsletter, or you can search for Alberta's COVID-19 pandemic response. It's dated January 28th, 2025. And yeah, like we said, it's damning. Go ahead.
Natalie, I'm not sure if you want to quickly mention the vaccine chapter, because that is getting a lot of play.
Oh, yes, please. Before we go, let's go over that.
That's kind of...
the banger.
Yeah, that is the encore. Because when I read that chapter, I thought, oh my God, heads should roll. And based on the Alberta report, the safe and effective slogan should really be changed to toxic and ineffective. So it's pretty bad. So with this chapter, what they do is they present some safety data. They look at the toxicity of the lipid nanoparticles, and they just quickly go through the main issues with the clinical trials, namely that they didn't establish that the vaccines reduced transmission, hospitalization, or death. And that was the case for Pfizer, Moderna, as well as Johnson & Johnson. And so based on this chapter, they recommend three main things. The first one, the biggest one, is they recommend halting COVID-19 for healthy children and teenagers. So a lot of people are very upset about that. The second recommendation is to have full disclosure of all the vaccine risks. And the third recommendation is to have support for the vaccine injured. And even though this report has been out for less than 2 weeks, it has already been filed in a court case for a class action lawsuit on behalf of vaccine injured individuals. So that it is a big deal.
That's, yeah, right. I mean, they openly admit that the vaccines were not effective in stopping transmission, which was not allowed to be said in the year 2020 and into 2021, citing the Cleveland study that we've talked about several times, that immunity goes down as you get more vaccines. So, yes, it's damning. This is, I guess, not new to you and I, but amazing to see a government admitting it.
It is. It is. Like, a lot of people here are happy. I mean, you're going to get pushback, right? I mean, it was, like I said, it said some pretty nasty things about the regulatory bodies. And of course, they're still pushing the vaccines here. So they don't want to hear people asking to halt them. So this is big news.
Yeah, it really is. Thank you so much for bringing it to our attention and breaking it down. I want to remind you that Dr. Regina Watiel was one of the earliest to point out that the Canadian government was using hate science, or basically fake models, to torture the unvaccinated in Canada. I really recommend her book, Fisman's Fraud. And again, you can follow her on X. So thanks for coming back on Redacted. It's always a pleasure to talk to you.
Oh, thank you so much for having me back. This has been great. Thanks, Natalie.
Well, that's our show for today. It's a busy week. Stay with us. We will be back tomorrow. Remember, Redacted streams live Monday through Thursday and serves up content all throughout the week. So make sure you're subscribed to Redacted on whatever platform that you like to watch us on. We really appreciate your patronage. Hey, we also have a newsletter. Make sure you head on over to redacted.inc. Click the link to get the newsletter, and it is totally free. There's nothing there that's upsold or behind a paywall or anything like that, unless we link you to another news organization from time to time that may have a paywall. We don't intend to do that. We really try to get you a link to original source material. So please do subscribe, share it with your friends, keep up with the Redacted newsletter. We appreciate you. Thank you so much for your time, and we will see you again tomorrow, everybody. Thanks again.